Support for Spookfound Spotlight is provided by the City of Maryville, featuring a conference center at Mazingo Lake Recreation Park, offering a destination for wedding receptions, parties, reunions, and more. Details on availability and accommodations are at mazingolake.com. And from Kawasaki Motors Manufacturing in Maryville, producing gas-powered engines for lawn and garden equipment for over 30 years. Kawasaki has employment opportunities available now for all three shifts, weekends, and full and part-time. For more information, KawasakiMaryville.com.
Welcome back to Spoofhound Spotlight here on KXCV. Karen W., I'm Jeremy Werner. Join me as he has for our first two episodes of Spoofhound Spotlight is Maryville R2 Superintendent, Dr. Logan Lightfoot. And we're also joined today by the school district's school resource officer, Mr. Ian Myers. I want to thank both of you for making time and joining us this morning, especially since, you know, it is back to school month and there's a lot of moving pieces going on. Well, I figure since, you know, you're the guest, we might as well start with you as school resource officer. And I'm sure there's some misconceptions about the job itself. I mean, in terms of like, you know, what it is you do. And I'm sure you get that from students and parents alike. So, you know, what's a summary, I guess, of what you do as school resource officer?
So that is maybe potentially the hardest question for me to answer, just because I feel like the role encompasses so much more than your general law enforcement duties. As the SRO, you really have an awesome opportunity to get into classrooms, build relationships with kiddos. One of the ways that I do that is through the DARE program, which, if we're honest, probably doesn't look a whole lot like what our parents' DARE program looked like or what it looked like for us when we were kids. That is more driving home, you know, good decision-making skills, how to avoid peer pressure, you know, the dangers of alcohol and tobacco. But really, you know, aside from all of those, it gives me a chance to actually get in, get some face-to-face interaction every single week with our MR2 kiddos. And I've loved it. It's been a great time. Some of the relationships that I built with this year's senior class all started back when they were in sixth grade in DARE. I mean, it's one of those things that that has really given me a unique opportunity. As far as additional roles, I never would have realized this prior to working in the school, but a significant amount of what your day-to-day job duties entail is social work. The SRO's position in any school district involves a ton of social work in terms of potentially dealing with a mental health crisis that pops up or trying to find resources for a kiddo so that we can make sure they're succeeding, you know, both physically and academically. There's so much to it. And then, of course, you're maintaining a constant police presence. You're addressing any kind of criminal issues that arise. You're working closely with not only the children's division through DFS, but you're also working with the local juvenile office to help address issues when they pop up. It keeps you busy.
So how much has the job changed over the years? I know you mentioned, you know, how the DARE program that you are in charge of there has changed since, you know, our parents and you yourself did it. You know, what other aspects of the job have changed over the years, or have there been duties you did have and then they kind of dropped off, or newer duties, you know?
That's a great question. I'm going to be honest with you. I think that it would be easier to answer what hasn't changed as opposed to what has changed.
Okay.
I feel like working in a school nowadays is just it's a unique environment in the sense that these kiddos are exposed to far more than what you or I may have been when we were kids or what Dr. Lightfoot and I may have been. It's not all of that is bad. There's a lot of good that comes along with that. But it makes you think a lot more, I guess, from my perspective, because you have to be able to adapt and you have to take different approaches with different kiddos depending on any one of a million different factors. And to be entirely honest with you, it is just, again, I think it would be easier to answer what hasn't changed than what has.
I'd like to kind of pipe in a little bit from a school leadership perspective. You know, when I think of an effective SRO, you know, Jeremy, back to your original question on what has changed. You know, I think the role has changed a little bit from my seat. The most effective SROs that I see are ones that are very, very skilled and gifted in developing relationships with all types of kids. You know, that can be your kids that might struggle a little bit, your kids that really enjoy school, and every kid in between. And, you know, we're at Maryville R2, we are incredibly blessed to have Officer Myers, because he is one of those types of SROs that really does a great job at developing those relationships. And when you talk about school safety, you know, you really do have a great advantage when you have a presence, a law enforcement presence in your schools, that kids look to that person and have a very good relationship with that person. And for so many reasons, we have that in Maryville R2, and it's nice to be able to have that, to be able to, you know, when you talk about some of the, you know, some of the scary things about school safety, but also even your day-to-day kinds of things, it's great to be able to have someone like that in your schools.
And, you know, this is for both of you. How is it that how do you figure out how the SRO's time is divvied up between all the different school buildings in the district?
So ultimately, and that's actually a really good question too, I go where I feel that I am most needed. Sometimes that is based off of a phone call that I may receive from a building administrator or counselor. Or if I do have some free time, I'll mix up my time. I don't want to be in the same building at the same time all the time. I feel like I would be doing every other building in the district a disservice if I was doing that. But you go where you're needed. You go where you feel you can make the biggest impact for that day.
And so, you know, one thing I always think of when I think of school resource officers is the one that I had in school, in high school. I didn't have one in middle school or elementary, but I had one in high school, and I always thought his interactions with students was interesting, because there was just some that absolutely hated him, and then there were others just loved him. So I'm curious, how do you, like, you know, communicate with students in a way to where, you know, they work with you? Because at the end of the day, you're an adult and a law enforcement figure, so it's like almost a double negative in a student's mind sometimes.
Sure. And you do run into that sometimes. Again, and not to go back to something we already talked about, but being able to utilize the DARE program from kindergarten to sixth grade has allowed me to build a firm foundation of what law enforcement should look like in their minds, that we should be approachable, that they can trust us, that they can come to us if they need anything. And really, I think I've been successful in doing some of that. Obviously, you're going to have a few outliers here. I'm sure there are some kids out there that would probably say otherwise. That's no different than any other school district in the United States. Now, with that said, when you have the time to build those individual relationships with those kids, you know what to look for in them. You know what to talk to them about. You know how to interact with them. Even at the high school level, you're talking about kiddos that are, you know, they're beginning that transition into adulthood. And so if you have a relationship that you've built with a kid over the course of several different years, it's going to give you a better idea of how you can approach a specific topic before you even have to sit down and have that conversation. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's kind of like, I guess, almost being like another parental figure in their life for years.
Well, yeah, you know, I guess, I don't know if I'd go that far, but okay. It's something, it's showing them that public service typically looks a lot different than what it does on TV. Mm-hmm. And so ultimately we want them to trust us as local public servants. We want them to feel that they can approach us. And that's really what I try to instill in these kids. And, you know, you can build relationships during the school year. And then when I transition back to patrol during the summer months, you know, I may see a kid out here or there, and they may stop me and say, hey, and there's really nothing more rewarding than having that happen. When you're out and about, you're back to what everybody else would consider, you know, the main job of law enforcement. You're on patrol, you're answering 911 calls and doing all those fun things. When you're approached by a kiddo that you've had an impact on, and they recognize you and they say, hey, and they ask how your summer's going, and they can sit there and carry a conversation with you, then I think you've accomplished something. And there's no better feeling in the world.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I just, when I think of it from the school's perspective of it, you know, having Officer Myers or an SRO in the building that builds those kinds of relationships, the word I think of and associate with is advocate. And, you know, that person, that role, they don't assign a grade, anything like that. But, you know, to be able to have that, that other person in the building that really can relate to a student, that can just be a kind of a cheerleader, a support, those kinds of things, that plays such a influential part in not only our school operations, but our kids' lives as well.
And so with the first week of school, what kind of factors go into, you know, preparing for that? As you said, you know, summer months, a lot more kind of patrolling and, you know, not as kind of interacting with students outside the educational realm. What is it that you do to get ready for that?
Sure. So I take about a week typically prior to the start of the school year to get myself reacclimated, to start having conversations with our staff, with building admin at the police department. And really, we start that prep work for what we want the school year to look like. And there's a lot of work that goes into that. Dr. Lightfoot can speak a lot to that. You know, he has been involved in a huge part of that and done a tremendous job with everything since he's arrived in our district. But ultimately, taking that week is more about getting back into the right mindset. You know, I think most people for anybody out there that's ever met me, what you see with me is pretty well what you get. There's not a whole lot of change that's associated with that. But when you go from working from patrol, where you're dealing with primarily adults, to a situation where you're dealing primarily with juveniles, juvenile work can be highly emotional. It can be very intensive. There's a little bit of mental prep that goes into something like that. And so you try to spend that time getting yourself ready and making sure that everybody else that's going to be working with you and is around you is ready for that as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what is it that kind of guided you towards this career?
Well, it's really funny that you asked that, because I actually, I went to college for journalism and communication arts and wound up as a police officer in Northwest Missouri, 4.5 hours away from my home. So it's funny that you ask that. But as far as the school aspect alone, I was very fortunate to be selected as the Maryville Police Department's next DARE representative after Sergeant Rick Smale had announced his retirement. And so I attended training while Sergeant Smale was still at the department. And after completing that training, that gave me a chance to get into the classroom, see the day-to-day interactions between teachers and students, and, you know, give me an idea of what students look for or look at when they see law enforcement. And that really fascinated me. That, you know, that kind of ignited a fire to get in there and to do more, see what we can't do to help, you know, help those relationships grow to fruition, I guess would be the best way to put it. That really, that has, the SRO position, there's no doubt in my mind, has given me the opportunity to do some of the coolest things that I've ever done in my life. And I have truly, truly enjoyed it. You know, it's been a blast. There's no real other way to put that.
Yeah. And not to tout my own degree, but I'm sure, like, you know, having a bit of a communication background also helps in your position as well when it comes to, you know, dealing with people of different age ranges.
Well, sure. It helps a little bit in terms of just being able to communicate with them. You know, you and I may have never met prior to me coming into this room, but we're sitting here having a conversation like we've known each other for years, right?
Yeah.
You know, it helps in terms of confidence, I think, would probably be the biggest thing.
Okay. And so, you know, looking at, you know, at the start of the school year, you know, I think one of the things I've heard from a few people in town, including some parents, is the South Main construction that's been going on. And I'm sure you've, you know, been dealing with it, both of you, all summer. But, you know, now that the school year started, you know, what are the hurdles associated with it now?
Oh, I can answer that from my side for sure. I actually just sent some communication out to parents about that. And as a school district, I can tell you we're very excited with the progress that's been made in our city. When this thing is all said and done, we are thrilled to use the new roads and be able to have the improved safety and all the infrastructure and all those things that go with it. And that's a great deal for our school district and our community. The things that are going on right now, I mean, I tend to be pretty Pollyannic on things like this, but we're gonna make do, and it's gonna be fine. You know, we might have to, we've got 13 bus routes right now that touch rural, that touch, you know, town, all those, and everything in between. And when you kind of look at where the closures are right now, that's fairly close to our campus and it's close to our secondary schools, and that's okay. We're gonna kind of adjust, and we've got our routes scheduled right now to where we're going to get our kids home safely and efficiently. It's probably going to be a few minutes later than what our kids and our parents are normally used to from maybe last spring or last fall. But you know what? By the time October hits, we're going to figure it out. And I can tell you, you know, just with the way construction typically goes and with the way road construction goes, is as soon as the South Main project is done, they're probably going to move down and have to, you know, do a little bit of a closure somewhere else, and we'll have to adjust there. That's okay. I mean, we are willing partners and willing participants with the city, and we're going to make things work on our end. And I just, there's nothing that can get thrown at us at this point that's going to just, you know, close a route down or something like that, and we'll get our kids home.
Okay. From a safety perspective, you know, that Dr. Lightfoot nailed it, really. Aside from delays that you may run into every once in a while, I think at this point, everybody that lives in Maryville is probably used to the South Main construction at this point. That's where a large number of our local businesses reside. And we're used to having a little bit of a backup with that. With school coming back in session, obviously we may have to take a little bit longer time on our morning commute. If you do have to travel one of those routes, everything's going to be fine. We're going to make it work. And our district admin have worked really, really, really hard to make sure that our drop-off and pickup procedures at all of our buildings, you know, run as seamlessly as possible. And so that would be the biggest hurdle to overcome. And they've already taken steps to address that in terms of how they're going to run drop-off and pickup. I think we're in good hands.
Okay. Has there been any problems with school bus driver shortages? I know there's a few districts in Kansas City that are experiencing that, but I didn't know if it was impacting here us in the rural communities out here.
Jeremy, would you like an application? I joke. No, it's in all seriousness, that has been an issue. It's been an issue locally. It's been an issue in our state. And I can tell you, I came from a different state. It was an issue there. It's become harder and harder, in a position to be a bus driver, because you think of a couple factors. The job itself is hard. You are in a moving classroom that you have to direct, you have to drive a bus, and you have to control 30 to 40 kids. That's a hard job in and of itself. And then you think of the certification that goes on top of it, where you have to be highly skilled and trained, you know, to have a CDL, to carry a CDL and everything that goes with that. And so it's a pretty tough ask. And so to answer your question, yes, it's been tougher to get. Right now we are putting a class of drivers through. And when I say we, Jarnik, our bus service is the ones that actually runs through and trains those drivers. And so we are, you know, in terms of being staffed, we are. But are we looking, and, you know, could we definitely use some extra drivers? Certainly. But it's one of those things to where, you know, where our staffing was 10, 15 years ago, we're definitely not there. But I would say, you know, we're covered, our routes are covered, and that's kind of the important thing as we get school started this August.
Okay. And I just had a weird question just pop up in my mind. Are school buses as rowdy as they were when I was a kid, of just like, you know, paper wads being thrown around and yelling? And because I was thinking about that, and I was like, you know, I see a lot of students just with phones and just buried in it and kind of quiet. So I almost wonder if, like, are school buses as rowdy as they used to be?
You know, you bring an interesting perspective there. I really do think with technology now, I think those bus rides to and from school probably are a little more quiet than what it was. And,
there's a bonus
90s.
For the job. It's not as bad as when you were a kid.
It's a good plug. You're right. No, in all seriousness, we don't. You know, in our routes, this is probably another example of perspective. You know, the job that I came from, our routes were much larger and much longer. And so I look at some of our routes, you know, especially our town routes, our kids aren't typically on buses an awful long time. And so, you know, the opportunities for kids to have to sit on a bus for 2 hours, you know, we don't have that all that much. And so kids can get on and off buses fairly quickly, and the opportunities or the downtime, so to speak, for them to get in trouble, I think, is a little bit less. And this is, you know, sounds a little bit cliche, maybe a little bit corny, but it's true. We have great kids in Maryville, and I think generally speaking, our kids do the right thing. I mean, we have rowdy kids, and kids can get a little bit rowdy on buses sometimes. But I would say for the most part, we have very good kids that really do abide by our bus rules.
Yeah, and when I say rowdy kids, I mean, you know, kids will be kids.
Yeah, right.
Kids doing kid stuff, it happens. Yeah. Some of that will never go away.
No.
We all know that.
Oh, yeah. There's just certain things that will be universally true for kids, like just farts will be funny. And in terms of men, it will be funny even at our ages. So, you know.
Correct.
Well, the other thing I wanted to touch on was this month's Board of Education meeting, where we talked beforehand about a discussion about moving forward in the future, kind of a comprehensive plan. I can't say it in as many flowery or descriptive words that you can, so I'll go ahead and let you explain it.
Well, you know, Jeremy, we took kind of a first, an important step last week, and we are going to move forward. What we'd like to do in May is have a comprehensive long-range facility plan. And what we mean by that is we have, if you look at our school district, and in particular our facilities, so our outdoor facilities, our school buildings, all those kinds of things. You put all that together, we have some wonderful areas. We have, you know, you look at our Performing Arts Center, you look at some of our, you know, our middle school, some of those things that are really great examples of, you know, maybe some of our newer, some of our really well-built places. But if you look at, you know, our district as a whole, we also have some areas that are some great opportunities that for growth or, you know, for improvements and things like that. And so I think if you get, you know, 30 teachers or administrators or parents all in a room, you could probably get 30, 40 different ideas on things that we could improve and do better. We're at a point now where we probably want to include some professionals in that discussion as well that can really kind of help guide the conversation and maybe even give a different viewpoint and, you know, from an architectural perspective or an engineering perspective, what might that look like? You know, is that feasible? Is that not? That kind of thing. So we have put out as a school district what's called an RFQ, and that's a request for qualifications. And so we are just opening it up and trying to find the right company that can come in or the right firm that will work with our public, that will work with our staff, and can kind of get us all together, you know, in the, you know, so to speak, in the same room to where we can kind of talk about maybe ideas, what, you know, what we're passionate about, what we really kind of see as the big needs of Maryville R2 over the next 5, 10, 20 years, and how the role of school facilities play in that. Get all that information together, get all that feedback together, get some professional advice on that, maybe put some pricing to that and things like that, and come up with a plan and actually have that for our Board of Education in about the April or May timeline, and maybe have that for adoption then.
Okay, and because Mr. Myers is here, how much does security factor into that?
No, I'm glad you asked that. That's a great question. It absolutely does. When you talk about it, whether it's outdoor or indoor facilities or anything like that, we want to make sure security is such an interesting thing. And Officer Myers could speak a lot more to this, but when you think about making sure your building is secure, you obviously have technology which can change, you know, every 1, 2, 3 years. But, you know, there are things you can do and ways that you can construct and build a building that can be very smart from just a tactical, you know, logistical way to where you can build those things to where it can be safe, you know, for many years to come. But it really does take a little bit of forethought, and you absolutely do need to involve, you know, law enforcement and security in that process.
Okay. And, you know, the other thing I kind of wanted to mention, just because we are carrying the football games here on 90.5 and 88.9, but you know, the first home game coming up for Maryville, you know, first I wanted to ask you, Dr. Lightfoot, how do you prep for that, since it will be your first home game as well?
Yeah, this is going to be a big one. I think about not even just with football, because, I mean, I remember Maryville from when I lived here in the early 2000s, and we were talking about this a little bit off air. Maryville, whether it's home or away, man alive, did they bring a crowd. And so there's not much. This is where my job, actually, I feel like I've got kind of the easy job here. A lot of this falls on, like, Ops or Myers and our building administrators to really make sure that, you know, the event is, you know, well-staffed and hosted and those kinds of things. I get to kind of just show up and enjoy the event and that kind of thing. So really not a lot of prep on my end, but I'm excited. You know, this is – my wife and I are actually talking about this last week. This is our first time in a long time that – we're going to get to, you know, go to a home football game to where we're going to have to show up earlier. We're not getting seats. And that's in a really exciting place to be. And to just the school spirit that's here, it is something like unlike any other. And it's not something that's been created in the last 2, 3, or 4 years. The pride that people have for Spoofhound athletics and activities, this is a culture that's been built over the last 20, 30, or 40 years. And when you get to step into that as a school superintendent, there is not a feeling like it. And so, long answer to your question, there's no anxiety or anything like that on my end. I'm just thrilled and excited to be able to go to those.
Well, and everybody loves this time of year. I mean, obviously, I don't think it's possible you can live in Maryville, Missouri, and not be a fan of football. I'd like to meet that person if there's somebody out there that claims that they're not. But we, from a safety and security standpoint, we're very, very fortunate. Our parents do a fantastic job at the games. Our kids do fantastic. You know, we run into very, very few issues that aren't parking related when it comes to football games. And I mean, if parking is the worst thing that you're having to deal with at an athletic event, I'd say that's a huge success. I'm really excited for it too. You know, we got Harrisonville coming in for our first home game, and it should be a good crowd. Let's pack the house. Let's get everybody out there. We're just as excited to see these boys get out on the field as what you guys are. So,
I was gonna say though, when I first came up here in 2019, I remember the first football season that rolled around, I kept thinking on Friday nights, like, what is that noise I keep hearing? And that is the crowd out there. So they are heard around the area.
And you know what? Again, this is a great community. I mean, school district and everything else aside, you know, we've got good people here who care about their kids, and that are actively involved. And you really can't ask for much more than that.
No, not at all. And I thinking about it holistically, Spoofhound activities and athletics for the fall, man, our parents, our community, we support all of them. And it's just a really good time to be a fan of Spoofhound athletics right now. I mean, you look at soccer, you look at cross country, you look at volleyball and softball. Like, we are really in for a special fall season. I happened to be out the multi-room last week, and, you know, we've got a, you know, brand new softball head coach, and I think there's 22 girls out for softball. We've got volleyball, a ton of returners that are going to be really good. I mean, same, you know, cross country, we lost a few really good runners. We got some young ones stepping up, and it's going to be a lot of fun this fall.
Okay, well, those are all the questions I think I have. Is there anything maybe I neglected to ask or anything you guys wanted to mention?
Oh, no, not much. I just, you know, the only thing I did want to maybe mention a little bit on the school safety standpoint is just this year was a little bit, we wanted to maybe approach our training a little bit more uniquely this year. Not in light of Uvalde or anything that, you know, not because of that, but just we sat down this year as kind of a leadership team with Officer Myers, and we recognize Maryville's a little bit unique, and unique when I say that from other schools, maybe even in our area, to where we have different buildings. We're not all in the same building, and each one of those buildings has very, very unique needs in terms of school safety. When you talk about the age group and of the kids, but also about the layout of the buildings. And so what we've done, we're taking a little bit of a different approach with our school safety training. Officer Myers visited each one of our staff meetings this summer, and got some feedback from all of our staff, and he's actually going to use that feedback to kind of help drive our training in September and November. So it's one of those, we're going to try to provide ongoing training for staff, and we're hopefully going to be able to involve kids a little bit too, just to kind of help them a little bit and get them a little more comfortable with building safety as well, because we were, that's important. And what we didn't want to do is just put a, you know, 45-minute rubber stamp on it and call it good. And so we feel like that's something that's a pretty big point of emphasis this year for us.
Absolutely. And, you know, from my perspective, getting the feedback that Dr. Lightfoot was talking about really allows me to see what our staff and our faculty in each building think is our largest need from a safety perspective. Obviously, you know, there's one of me that bounces around the entire district. But we have a plethora of resources available to us in terms of assistance from our support staff, other officers at the police department that are willing to step up and assist with anything that pops up that we may need help with. We're really, really fortunate. And I do think that this survey is going to be a good way to not only make it safer for our students there, but it's going to give our staff a little bit of a peace of mind moving forward, knowing that, look, your concerns are being addressed. We're working on those actively right now. And you know what? We're gonna do what we can to make everybody feel as safe as they possibly can. We're very fortunate. Maryville, and obviously I'm biased in saying this. Let me preface it with that. But Maryville is an extremely safe district. We have been very, very fortunate to remain that way. And from a law enforcement perspective, in the event that something were to occur in one of our buildings, the response time from anywhere here in town is minimal for you to have law enforcement on scene, EMS on scene, fire on scene, depending on what type of emergency it may be that you're having to deal with. We are very, very fortunate. There are other schools in this area that may not have that same response time, which is going to put a little bit more responsibility back onto them. But we are very, very fortunate where we're at and with the resources that we have available to us.
Okay. Well, if that's it, I'll go ahead and kind of awkwardly segue to the next segment, which Dr. Lightfoot knows about. This is a Better Know a Superintendent, where I ask just random questions. Mr. Myers, you're more than welcome to participate.
I can't wait.
I wrote three down, and I'm trying to figure out which one I can just eliminate.
By the way, after our last one, my wife was putting me on the hot seat on the Wheel of Fortune stuff.
Really?
Saying, oh, yeah.
Well, I didn't mean to do that to you.
It's all right. She seems to think she's a little better than me. I don't think
all
she
right.
is.
All right. Well, I don't want you to put you on the spot with this one then, but what would you say is your go-to karaoke song? Like, and if you've never done karaoke, if you were just forced to do karaoke, what would a song be that you would be comfortable with?
I'm going to go and pick artist and not song.
Okay.
You give me anything Meatloaf. And I'm your guy.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
You can do it justice?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's in the eye of the beholder, I would say. But I can
listen to it.
I can rock Meatloaf.
I was going to say, I went to a karaoke night and I watched someone just butcher Paradise by the Dashboard Light, and the reception was just very negative.
It takes a special person.
Was there a Meatloaf song you can think of, or is that just any? Paradise, 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
I can go. I like his early stuff. I can do it all, though.
Okay. So you were a big fan of his?
I like myself a little Meatloaf.
So more of like the Steinman Meatloaf collaborations as opposed to all the solo stuff he did.
I'm a solo fan. I really am. I can go either way.
Mr. Myers, I didn't know if...
All right, so listen, I'm gonna probably take a whole lot of flack for this at home, too. But if I'm honest with you here, it is really hard to beat a good Rush song. I've got a little bit of a deeper voice, I think. But when it comes down to it, Geddy Lee, unrivaled. It's hard to hit those notes. It doesn't keep me from trying.
That's frequently. Fantastic.
Whether there's people around or not.
I guess I'm a little disappointed. No one chose like ABBA or anything. Like, just like cliche. And then the only other thing I had was, what is your perfect breakfast meal? And it doesn't have to be like, I don't know, a tradition. It could just be cold pizza left over from the night before. Because I remember in college, that was my perfect breakfast.
I will tell you, I have never in my life turned down Waffle House. And I'm never about to. Waffle House.
The place gets a bad rap. I love it. I love Waffle House.
Isn't it fantastic?
Saying it's the best, that's a hard sell. But it is delicious.
Yeah, it really is.
I'm going to be honest with you. When you ask what our favorite breakfast is, yes is my answer. I will eat breakfast for breakfast, lunch, and dinner all day, every day. That is my favorite meal of the day. I love it. You can't go wrong with pancakes. You get those sausage patties. You know, you get some hash browns mixed in there. And here's the caveat. You got to have hot sauce. You got to drown your eggs, your bacon, your sausage, your hash browns, whatever. You got to drown it in hot sauce.
What hot sauce do you use?
Okay, well, I use a bunch of different kinds, but I'm a Texas Pete's guy going for flavor.
That's fantastic.
I'm a Texas Pete's guy.
You can never go wrong with Texas Pete.
Love it. Yep. Love it. I think Tabasco is a little bit overdone. Let's go Texas Pete's.
Good flavor.
Texas Pete is a lot more mild to me in terms of like the heat.
So there's a difference between hot sauce and hot sauce, right? Some of that loses its flavor. Texas Pete's, not very hot, great flavor.
Yep.
Great flavor, though.
You ever go Texas Pete on pizza?
Oh, yeah. I put Texas Pete's on everything.
So do I.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Fantastic.
I used to really enjoy Red Hot until every company just decided that was the go-to hot sauce for whatever we're making, and they just put it on everything, and I'm like, nah, I don't need Red Hot anymore. They use it for buffalo. They use it for just almost anything now in fast food. I don't know why. When there's like so many different varieties. I mean, you know, Texas Pete, Texas style. And then, of course, right next to in Louisiana, you have Crystal, which is a really good hot sauce, I think.
Oh, yeah. And I've had that before, too. It's, you know, again, I think you're hard-pressed to beat that flavor, though.
I would wholeheartedly agree.
Now, what is it that you get at Waffle House?
Oh,
Casa de Waffle.
That's
you get the picante sauce, right?
Mm-hmm.
You put that on everything.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You got to.
There's nothing on that menu that I do not that I wouldn't order. I mean, it's fantastic. I take my every chance I get. I take my son there.
What is the closest one?
St. Joe, I think.
Oh, St. Joe's our closest Waffle.
Okay, where is that in St. Joe? I don't know if I've ever
South End out by Menards.
Okay.
So,
I know. It's on a hill, kind of, right?
Yeah, it kind of sits back. It'd be to the west of the interstate if you're traveling south.
Okay. Well, now I have to ask the obvious as a townie. Have you been to Gray's Truck Stop yet?
Oh, love Gray's. Yeah.
Okay.
In fact, I got taking back full circle to my son. I have spoken to my son many times about Gray's. We have yet to get there on a Saturday morning, and I've got to get my son to Gray's. Gray's is just about as good as Waffle House.
I mean, that is the... I'm trying to think if we have any underwriters. But that had served breakfast. But no, I would say that's the go-to just breakfast place in town.
That's biscuits and gravy from Gray's. That was my college breakfast for several years, every Saturday.
That's still my after-church breakfast with the family every Sunday.
Well done.
Never fails.
Yep.
Never fails. You got to wait. Is everybody else in this corner of our beautiful state loves going there too, but it's worth the wait.
Well worth it.
It is absolutely worth the wait.
I love biscuits and gravy for the fact it's a very Midwest thing. Because outside the Midwest, there's a lot of people who've just never had it.
Yeah.
And it's like...
It sounds like we're doing something right and everybody else is doing it wrong then.
Agreed.
Oh, yeah. Want to thank both of you for joining me this morning here on Spoofhound Spotlight. Once again, that was Maryville R2 Superintendent Dr. Logan Lightfoot and the school district's SRO, Mr. Officer Myers. I'm Jeremy Werner, and don't forget to tune into next month's Spoofhound Spotlight, which will be the final Monday of the month at 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. right here on KXCV KRNW.
Support for Spoofhound Spotlight comes from Kawasaki Motors Manufacturing, producing gas-powered engines for lawn and garden equipment for over 30 years, thanks to the workforce at its Maryville plant. Employment opportunities at Kawasaki are available now. For information on careers, kawasakimaryville.com. Also from the city of Maryville, home to Mazingo Lake Recreation Park. Golf offerings at Mazingo Lake include the Seacrest 18, the Watson 9, and golf simulators open year-round in the Conference Center. Details on tee times are available at mazingolake.com.